a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Blog Roundtable got started early. These guys, the mic isn't even on.
And there's fighting.
And they've already started.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, doggone it. Save it. Save it for the microphone.
And Brian wouldn't even hug anybody.
Yeah,
he spent the whole week hugging.
Nobody asked me to hug anybody.
So, well, yeah, that was Ed that did all the hugging last week. But, you know, the Wolverines. The Wolverines, and I'll get you guys' take from the first weekend of action. Michigan did not play well, and yet they won. I think that's one of the signs of a good team. You cannot play your best and still win, and I can't imagine. I just don't see Michigan continuing to perform as poorly offensively as they did in the first couple of games. The layoff. You guys agree? The layoff had a lot to do with it?
I don't know what had something to do with it, but, I mean, I went back and I charted all the three-pointers Michigan shot against Houston. They were mostly good shots.
Yeah.
There were four or five that were kind of late-clock jacks, but the rest of them were just, you know, rhythm threes, part of the offense. And for only 24% of those to go down before Jordan Poole intervenes is probably just a bad luck thing or a layoff thing or something along those lines.
We didn't shoot well against Montana either, though, from three. I mean, Muhammad is what, 1 for 12, 1 for 13 in the tournament.
1 for 12, yeah.
So he hasn't been – we haven't been shooting the ball well, that's for sure.
And he was an assassin in the Big Ten tournament. It was like, you know, O ratings of 140, 130, 120 every game. And he really, really struggled. So did a lot of other guys. It's probably just one of those things, and it's nice that Michigan had a team that was able to pull it out. Like, no other Beeline team wins that Houston game. No
right.
chance.
Right, because no other Beeline team can play defense. I assume that's what you're saying at that level. I mean, we won even the Montana game. We're down 10-0 against Montana, and they score out of the get-go. They score 37 points the rest of the game. That's it.
Yep.
And that game was won on defense.
It helps to just the dogfight, as Steve Clark predicted last week.
Interesting thing is that both the teams that Michigan played in the first weekend have two actual post players on the floor most of the time. And so does Texas A&M. So they're a rarity in that when I was doing the lineup, I was like, these guys are both centers. Like, they have two centers who start, and that's pretty unusual for this day and age of basketball. It's going to be a matchup of contrasting styles.
But of course, the two Houston bigs were 6'6". These two guys are 6'10".
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying that they're, I mean, better, the Houston bigs, but, you know, it's just interesting that Michigan has come across.
Stylistically.
Yeah, three straight teams that have a four that doesn't really shoot.
I mean, do you guys see there as being any chance against Texas A&M that Michigan might go too big? They've done this.
No, I don't think so.
They haven't done it much this year.
You're letting them dictate at that point. I think Michigan's the place where Michigan can kind of exploit them is with their shooting, with their drawing their guys away from the basket. Now, they have some athleticism. I don't think that Mo is going to be able to take Robert Williams off the bounce like he did Nick Ward. But I also think that when you get those guys out of the paint, you are limiting their effectiveness greatly, because those guys are beastly in that area of the court, and they are, you know, you look at some of the some of the reports about them, you know, talking to some of the A&M guys, they aren't a terrific team at defending the pick and roll. You are going to get if you got a four and a five that can shoot, you're going to get some open looks against them. Yeah. And I think that's going to be the question for Michigan is, can they hit those shots? Between Mo not shooting well at all in either game, and then, you know, seeing some uncharacteristic air balls. you know, to see Duncan Robinson shoot an air ball.
Yeah, that one was about like, 10 feet wide. And,
rock shot some. They just like, well,
at least Duncan Robinson hit three in the first half.
He shot an air ball. You can go a whole season and I see Duncan Robinson shoot an air ball.
Yeah, that was there was not even a contest on that one. And I felt very strongly that we were going to lose as soon as that happened. I was like, someone put some sort of terrible hex in our Wheaties and we are doomed.
So let's get into A&M. We won't talk about how seriously challenged Virginia's offense was, like we talked about last week. Virginia's offense is challenged. I didn't think they would lose to a one seed.
No one thought they were going to lose to a
one seed, but I didn't.
But
think
the NBA talent, Sam. The NBA talent, right?
Yeah. Well, I thought that team was limited, and indeed they were and are. But guys, Texas A&M. So they destroyed, they dismantled North Carolina. Any real takeaways from that game for any of you?
Basketball is weird. That's the main takeaway. This is a team that was in the 300s in a number of three-pointers launched, and they're still worse than 250th in three-point percentage. And they start this game off 7 of 14 from three. UNC is 1 of 17 to start this game. So that's your 20-point hole right there. And from there, it's just, North Carolina gets desperate. A&M takes advantage and maintains their lead and knocks them out of the tournament. Weird things happen in basketball. And, I mean, I don't think you can take anything else away from that game because it was all about one team being super hot from three on not great looks. And then I thought UNC's looks were actually better than A&M's on the other end for most of that game.
Yeah, I don't think you can take too much away from the game. I was actually thrilled to the idea of getting Texas A&M instead of North Carolina. We're a favorite against Texas A&M. We would have been a dog against North Carolina. Texas A&M is offensively challenged, 62nd in my numbers in offensive efficiency. So I think it's great.
You know, I don't know. This is a tension between the data, which makes me happy to be playing Texas A&M, and my lying eyes, which saw the UNC-Texas A&M game where Brian disagrees. But I felt that A&M physically dominated that game, more than just making baskets and UNC not making baskets. I just felt that A&M was just a physically superior team. And that bothers me a bit because I felt that UNC kind of did the same thing to us. Now, that was earlier in the season before our point guard situation was settled and the game was at UNC. But I felt like they were more athletic. And I felt like Texas A&M was more athletic than
well, I think
UNC.
Both of those things are true. But fortunately, it's the game of basketball where skill is involved as well.
Xavier Simpson isn't the only difference. I mean, if you go back and look at that game, Michigan got really – they got bullied.
They
got bullied really bad. And Duncan Robinson and Isaiah Livers especially – and I just think those guys are different guys now. I think those guys are different guys. And frankly, they weren't effective on the other. You know, part of defense, part of matching up with these teams is making them play defense on the other end. And so whoever's at the four, whether it's Isaiah Livers or Duncan Robinson, they're going to have to hit a few shots. They're going to have to make them respect Michigan on the perimeter. If they don't, it's going to be a lot. The 4 and 5, to me, that's the biggest, that's the key to this game for Michigan. Those two spots, but especially Mo Wagner.
Well, I mean, to me, it's again going to be the point guard matchup because their point guard is actually their backup. They lost Marquette guard transfer midseason. Mm-hmm. And he's a freshman. He's got 30% usage, and he's got an O rating of 88, which is terrible.
I mean, he is not thinking pass.
Well, his turnover rate is super high. He's had, I think, at least 4 turnovers in 10 of his last 11 games. He had 5 against UNC. You know, he's the only creator on their roster. They have a 6'9 guy who's playing small four. They play the two posts. And then their shooting guard is a really, really good spot-up shooter, but he does not create his own shot very well. So TJ Starks, their point guard, gets a ton of, Deion Harris, please do something with this.
he can take you off the bounce.
Yes,
we saw that last week, and you know that's the thing with him and watching the pieces of that game that I did. He was really good at getting downhill.
Right, but he's a 43% shooter inside the arc, and he's got a huge turnover rate. So anytime he's going to the basket and putting it up, that's a win for Michigan.
So did you take a look at his stats? Let's say latter half or latter third of the season. How did he look at that
point? I mean, there's no real uptick in his efficiency because he turns the ball over so frequently. He had one really awesome game against Vanderbilt, but the rest of it's just like, you know, he gets a lot of shots up because he has to. They're difficult shots usually. He makes a fair number of them. I mean, he shoots unassisted threes. He has this floater in the lane that he's pretty good at.
And I actually think, you know, I got the – it's a one-game sample space, but I thought Hogue was kind of a
– I mean, he can't get to the rim. He's 6'9".
But from the standpoint of you, the attention that he commanded from Carolina on the perimeter –
I mean, he's Duncan Robinson. Like, he does a little bit more work on the boards. He's probably a little bit better defensively. But if you look at him and his stats, I mean, 60% of his shots are from three. His 38%, I mean, he's a guy who you need to close out hard on, but, you know.
What about him as a passer? That's one of the A&M guys on our site said, you know, he is a guy that can be a trigger man.
Yeah, I read that article. I didn't think much of his analysis.
So their best option on offense is to throw it into the post and they're bigs, right? I mean, they're going to have a size and thickness, height and thickness advantage against our guys.
I think you make a solid point in that, as I've been saying all week, I think this is a Styles make fight. His styles make the fight right. kind of game, and if they can dictate with their bigs, if they can make this a post defense game where Michigan is struggling to guard right. them in the post versus them struggling to guard Michigan on the perimeter, well, that advantage Texas A&M. I mean, Michigan, John Teske can maybe match up in the post against those guys consistently, but these.
I mean, right. But I don't know if they can do that. Like, I mean, against the Providence game, I don't know how much of a size advantage they had over Providence, but, like, there was a lot of kind of pull-up jump shots and, you know, drives to the basket in the first half of that game when they were down. I mean, they clearly came back and won that game. But, well, yeah, I'd be interested to see what they try to do on offense. I mean, I see this as a limited offensive team.
I mean, both Williams and Tyler Davis are – traditional back to the basket bigs, they don't have any face up game. So having two of those guys on the floor at the same time you're going to try to post up, but it's kind mm-hmm. of difficult because you can go from one post to the other with a double fairly consistently. And unless they can pass to that other big, you know, that's not a great option for them. So
there. Yeah, Williams can jump. I think we learned that.
Yeah, he's an NBA athlete. Yeah. That guy's
banging his head on the rim.
Yeah, he would have been a lottery pick if he left last year. Probably still would be. But that's mostly because he's a really great defensive player. He's got top 25 mm-hmm. block rate.
We were talking before we went on air about whether A&M would go zone or not. They have played some zone this year, and this is a matter of contention among the four of us.
What do you think, Craig? You didn't chime in there.
I tend to agree with Brian. I think that we've had trouble playing mm-hmm. against zone this year, and there may have Brian, I think, said there were 200 possessions this year against
something
zone
like that,
in that range. It hasn't been a whole lot, and we haven't seen a lot of zone lately. But
it's been rough,
and it seems like we trance a lot against zones, get into the shot clock late.
Yeah,
and then,
I'll have to pull up the.
And I know Ed and Sam disagree with us.
You know, I talked to Beilein about Michigan zone offense specifically, and he said exactly what I relate to you guys. He said, you know, mm-hmm. we see zone, and then it takes us like a couple minutes. It's like we haven't practiced against it, and guys are flustered for like. You know, the first 2-3 minutes we see it. And then
this will not be the case. And they got a week to prepare.
Yeah, then we settle in, and we are, you know, I feel like we can attack it. Yeah. I can attack it in the ways that I think, and I have to go back and find the games now, but, you know, you see they have established who their mid-post flashers are. I think they're pretty effective. It's nice to see that Charles Matthews has been hitting a few mid-range shots here in recent games. Duncan Robinson seems to have found his other than the air ball, seems to have kind of found his range. I feel good about that. And now that Xavier Simpson has really established himself, you have another guy. I mean, people see the zone and they think you got to jack up a three. That's not the case. You can still dribble into a zone. You can still dribble into a zone if you got a guy with some quickness.
Michigan does. A&M plays it on about 20% of their possessions. they're definitely going to run it. And they might run it from the drop. They might run it after Duncan hits a couple threes or Mo hits a couple threes, but they're going to try it out. Yeah. And then Michigan's going to stare at it for 5 minutes and not know what to do. That's going
to
happen.
And I guess to Craig's point with the prep beeline with prep time, you got it. He's got to leave.
You know, that's what I hope. But I just think that you have a point guard in Simpson who's hasn't had a jump shot off the dribble all year, and that's tough. Like he can penetrate the zone, but nobody has to react to him. Like, if he wants to shoot a floater in the lane, I think A&M's going to be happy with that all day, every day.
He might have to hit a few.
Yeah, he's going to have to hit the floater. And, like, the zone really kind of makes an offense take shots that they normally don't take. Some of the basketball people I talked to is like, well, you know, like an open 15-footer is a little bit of a weird shot for a college basketball player because you normally don't get that. Even with that being said, I mean, I think Michigan is a team that can move the ball well. I think they have a lot of options against the zone. The zone of Texas A&M does not scare me at all.
I think especially
with the
zone of A&M, I don't think to Brian's point, I think it's zone in general, not this zone specifically. So,
sure.
You know, if Michigan loses this game, I would be surprised if that's why. I'd be surprised.
Oh,
that's why.
That would definitely be why, because A&M isn't getting to a point per possession. Like, that's not happening.
I would be surprised if their zone defense is why. I would be. Well, we'll see.
If they lose, that's it. They're going to be shooting. It's going to be like the Michigan State game. That's how they lose this game.
All right, we got to get to a break, really.
Except they won't play a walk-on for 25 minutes instead of Jared Jackson.
Right, he's a weird guy.
He is a weird guy.
A weird guy. He played by choice, though. He played the weird guys because he didn't have any choice. This time, he chose the weird guy.
He chose the weird guy.
Have no idea why. Getting back to the game. When you look at A&M over the course of the season, you can certainly see places where it's like, man, it's not a team to be fearful of. But how much stock do you put in the comments from their people who say, and I know you weren't impressed with the commentary from our A&M guy, but there are people who say, hey, we've had injuries, we've had suspensions. This is the closest that we've been to some continuity. And this is the result you get, you know, the team playing this way.
I mean, they just lost to Alabama in their first game in the SEC tournament. They're a 9-9 SEC team. They've been healthy for 2, maybe even 3 months, except for their point guard, and their point guard isn't coming back. So they've been playing with this lineup for the last 9 games. They're 5-4, and Michigan's won 11 straight. So I think Michigan has a better argument for we're playing better.
They lost to Missouri, Arkansas, Mississippi State. They barely beat Vanderbilt and Georgia and Alabama in all close games. Then they lost to Alabama in the first round of their conference. So, yeah, I mean, that's true. I still think we're losing the game.
Why?
So
my eyes watching, you know.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, Craig thinks Gonzaga's losing to Florida State.
But that's not an argument, like saying, but you got to get out. You're like, why?
Yeah, I mean, you don't. Yeah, I
think we're not playing well. We're not shooting the ball well. We're not a particularly great shooting team. We are great on defense. Maybe one of the best two or three Michigan teams ever on defense. But I just don't. You know, from the way we're playing right now versus the way they're playing right now, I like them. What have I done for you lately?
Well, I guess for me, if you were looking at a 2-game sample space, the tournament,
right?
And I could see that. That's why ESPN had Michigan seeded 15th because they looked at 2 games.
Yeah.
But the mitigating circumstance to me is the week layoff. I mean, that week layoff, I think, is a tangible thing. Look at how they were playing.
Wait a minute, Sam. Earlier in this year, everyone was saying...
That's not a rest. Come on, man. That's
earlier this year, everyone's talking about, we played 4 games in 10 days.
And a 10-day layoff, however many days they were off. That's not the same thing.
Wait, Sam, if you believe in rest, then you got to believe that helped them.
Also, both those games tipped at 2 a.m. And, you know, they're playing mountain teams at 10 p.m. I think that has something to do with it. Like, they're used to tipping off
that. That's more salient.
Rest and layoff are not the same thing. Rest is a couple of days. A layoff is
no,
like
but
10.
You get rest hey, after 10 days.
Hey, did you enjoy the Syracuse Michigan State game? Because I thought of you. Because
Ed or me.
For you, because you they have like a 5-man rotation. They don't even they have
hey, that that Syracuse team was the weakest physical team I've ever seen in an NCAA tournament.
Okay, but like
they couldn't catch the
that's
ball.
What you wanted to do. You're like okay, if you have any more than six players on a basketball team, it's a disaster.
Nevada. No, I never would have that. This is a
you
major
have, you, wait, you have said that.
No, I've said that I think teams play their best when they have the right to miss. And the shorter your bench is, the more you have a right to miss.
Well, Syracuse used that right to miss. Well,
Syracuse is terrible.
They are terrible.
I mean, they're a terrible team.
Jim Boeheim would tell you that this is not one of his best teams.
I mean, they're just a terrible. I mean, they're a terrible basketball team. But wait a minute. Syracuse is in the final 16, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
With a terrible basketball team against a team with two lotto picks and five NBA guys.
Well,
they have a short bench, maybe because Syracuse is playing at their best, given their very massive.
They also scored 53 points in that game.
Don't use Tom Izzo's overcoaching and megalomania to buttress your point. I feel like you have a coach in Tom Izzo that maybe makes your point, trying to outthink the room by playing all these
playing all these guys,
but you know most coaches worth their salt. Would play their lottery pick. I shouldn't say worth their salt. Most coaches
without a severe cognitive deficit,
right, who don't think they're the smartest guy in the room all the freaking time, would say, hey, I'm going to do what most people would do. I would do what Craig Ross would do in this situation.
No, don't do that.
And play. Craig Ross would have played Jared Jackson.
Hell yeah.
Especially maybe.
He can play, I would do what Ed Fang and Ira Weintraub. Every regular Joe in the country would do what you have a 60-level
guy. Play your best player.
And play your best player. Not a guy who averages a couple of minutes.
Two minutes a game.
And you wonder why when it's crunch time and he has a shot, he passes up.
Yeah,
he plays like, 2 minutes a game.
He has a shot I make all day, and the kid passes it up. I mean, I don't get it.
That you can't make your point with Tom Izzo. That's my point.
Well, wait a minute. Tom Izzo, and I'm quoting him, has taken so many bullets that he's coming back next year. That's what he said. I mean, he's always a victim.
He is taking a lot of bullets, especially from this crowd.
Hey, man, it's his fault.
Hey, man, you see a zombie lurching towards you, shoot it.
They lost that game because of their coach. Now, he would say they missed 14 shots, their final 14 shots, right? Well, part of that is you didn't come up with an effective zone plan all game long.
They only had one day turnaround. Come on, Sam.
What? He didn't think they were going to beat Bucknell
Syracuse was going to make
because
it.
Because they suck, I know, but that's
not unreasonable that they think that they were going to lose the TCU.
I mean, why didn't we see Miles Bridges in the middle of the zone? I mean, try.
I know, he likes those mid-range jump shots.
He
doesn't like going to the basket, but he's got to be good at something.
You can't. My point is we saw very few solutions in that game.
The amazing thing about that game is they got 29 offensive rebounds. I never heard of that number. Michigan State, because Syracuse is so weak, they got 29 offensive rebounds, and they got I think something like 18 or 22 more shots.
It's
56%. They rebounded 56%.
It's a recipe for it. Now, you know, they...
I never heard
the 2-3, their zone is what they do. And they have found a way to...
They do it well.
I was getting to a rebounding point. Yeah. They still do a decent job of rebounding out of it. But they... Not only did they have there was a difference in mass of guys in the post, but you are dealing with an exceptionally good rebounding team against a zone team.
Yeah.
And it's just
a weak zone team.
It was just a recipe for Michigan State to really be able to abuse them on the offensive glass. It's just tough to rebound.
But how can you lose a game when you get 29 more, when you get 29
you
off
miss,
56%?
You shoot 25% from the floor. That's how you lose that game.
I guess that's right.
You don't have a plan.
You don't have a plan.
So, Craig, you got Syracuse over Duke, right?
You can't plan on the fly, put it that way. When your initial plan doesn't work, what do you do? And Tom Izzo had no answer. His answer was go to Ben Carter.
What, like, Michigan State has never played a Boeheim team before? I think they have.
And lost.
And lost, but they're playing the same defense, you know, only with better players.
Someone brought this up on our board, and I remember charting the Michigan game in the Final Four against Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And Mitch McGarry was brilliant. Yeah, he made one bad decision from the high post. Mm-hmm. One. It was a brilliant performance.
Well, hopefully Michigan has someone to do that against Texas A&M because they are going to see a butt ton of 2-3 zone. One butt ton.
I'm fearful that Brian's right.
Let's get back to Texas A&M.
I think Texas A&M will play some zone, and I think Michigan will be ready.
Well, it's a good thing that John Beilein is a coach, because if it was Tom Izzo, it would be Austin Davis as the guy at the free throw line. Maybe Brent Hibbett.
It would be Hibbett, yeah.
Hibbett has a nice 15-footer.
Great point.
But would he be afraid to use it or not?
I don't know.
I had Ken Palmer on my podcast in mid-February, and he gave me Texas A&M as his most disappointing team. And I don't think anything of their performance, maybe outside of the North Carolina game, would make you think that that is not a proper assessment of this team. Can we talk about Gonzaga? Can we move on?
No. After the break.
No?
After the break, we can talk about some other teams.
It's gonna be Florida State.
Gonzaga was the team that I picked at the beginning that I said Michigan would face in the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Was Gonzaga. I just think that
you had Michigan and Gonzaga in the Elite Eight?
Yes, I did.
That's not even that much of a stretch.
Come on. I'm not saying it's a stretch. I'm saying it's a good pick.
Okay.
I mean, I'm giving Sam credit because I didn't
know that. Most of the show had that in the really? Elite Eight, yeah?
Yeah, I had UMBC.
No faith in Zay.
Well, you shouldn't have had much faith in Xavier.
Yeah, no faith in Xavier.
They're not.
Most of the rest of the bracket, so that's how we ended up where we did.
9:45 on a Thursday morning. Got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. And we're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. So we got a question from the listening audience, and I guess there's some disagreement among the panel here. The question was, might we see Michigan throw some zone in there? I actually think we will.
What?
But you don't think we will.
No, I mean, Michigan, I mean, they busted it out against Penn State. That's really the last time they played any, right?
Yeah, we haven't played a lot of zone possessions this year. I would be surprised if we've played 50.
Like, I think it's like Michigan might have that in their back pocket if they need it. I just don't think they're going to need it. Like,
yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, if they start having... If Texas A&M is having their way in the paint, or Michigan has some foul trouble, this is a way to kind of protect the inside a little bit. Now, if they're you say that they aren't a particularly good 3-point shooting team.
They have two guys who shoot the three well, but they only have two shooters on the floor at any
one time. And they have a point guard that isn't the best decision maker.
I mean, he's a turnover machine. Like I just put Xavier on him and go.
I think he's gonna blow him up. I think the thing that would cause you to do that is if they are working you in the paint. Then I could see them. I could see them throw some zone in. I could see them throw some post double down in. I think Michigan is multiple like that, where they could throw some different things at you defensively.
I agree on the post double down. I think we'll see some of that to see if one of those big guys can actually pass the ball out of the double team. I'm not so sure they can, and that's plausible. I mean, A&M is not a good 3-point shooting team on the season. I mean, they're well below average. I think 260 something, and they're 33%. I think season average this year is a little over 35. So, yeah, that's true. They're not a great shooting team. They look like a good shooting team against UNC, though. But
also, both of those bigs are kind of iffy from the line. Williams, especially. He's a
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, they are probably the only team we will play this year who's as bad at the free throw line as Michigan is. I mean, they're not quite as bad, but they're almost as bad. So, I mean, they're in
If Livers needs to use 5 fouls in 10 minutes, that's probably fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're like 66% at the line, so they're terrible.
So who wins? Because I want to get you guys' take on some other matchups. So who wins the game, Brian?
Michigan comfortably.
Michigan for sure.
Texas A&M.
You contrarian.
Well, hey, Michigan was a 3-point favorite earlier this week, and they moved toward the Craig Ross pick. They're a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I think Michigan's going to the Final Four.
I sure hope so.
I had them matched up all along against Gonzaga. Gonzaga has always been the team that's scared me the most in this region.
I would agree with that.
They're long, they're skilled. They're the team that can match Michigan.
Was a good coach.
And match Michigan with perimeter versatility. They have playmaking in the back of that. That is a team that the question you always have about Gonzaga is, has their competition really prepared them for what they're going
to
see in the
tournament? And I say the answer to that is no, and they will lose to Florida State. So if Michigan gets by, they're playing Florida State.
It's another Styles makes fight type of game. And I think that they are so skilled, with their front court that's going to be the difference in that game. I don't think that they're guy. If it turns out to be a low post game where they're dictating, then you're right. I just don't think it's going to work out that way. So we'll see. But so clearly, you like Florida State. You like Gonzaga. I was bullish on Villanova. I had Villanova making it to the title game as well. Who do you like now that we are down to 16? Who do you like in the Final Four?
As the whole Final Four?
The whole Final Four.
Nova, Duke, Michigan, and Kentucky.
All right.
Yeah, I'll go with Nova, Duke, and by my numbers, like, the vast majority of the probability to win this tournament is on the right side of the bracket. And then I'll take Gonzaga.
You know what struck me, Ed, because I wanted to get to you. Man, it just felt like some of these, while we saw some upsets, obviously, UMBC, where they were able to do their thing, right? I feel like some of these lower-seeded teams just choked. Just absolutely. I mean, I know Buffalo, they beat Arizona. But, I felt like Charleston choked. I felt like Bucknell had some real opportunities against
Greensboro gave what Gonzaga game the
other day. Right. I felt like Kentucky and I had the upset pick in that opening round with Davidson. Davidson had they had great looks from three that they flat out missed. Their best player went 1 for 9 from three, and a lot of those looks were open. The lower seeded teams this year, more than any, lower seeded teams really had a real shot early on.
Yeah, for sure. But, then you saw some of the 7 seeds, like the Nevada's and the Texas A&M's of the world really come through in that next round.
So what do you make of the defensive stalwarts just crumbling?
Yeah.
So Virginia crazy. In the second half giving up 50-plus points, and then Cincinnati surrendering a 22-point lead.
Cincinnati looked hapless in the last 8 minutes on defense against Nevada. Nevada didn't exactly have a great game plan. It was like, go to the basket and make it, either pull up from three. But it wasn't the normal Cincinnati intensity. You watch those guys during the regular season, they just get up in your mug, and all those types of shots are hard. I don't want to take anything away from Nevada because they're a pretty talented offensive team. But, yeah, I don't think it's likely that we'll see – those were very good defensive teams. So
I just think those teams needed to shorten their bench a bit.
Oh. Who's your Final Four?
And then in that crazy South region, numbers-wise, you definitely like Kentucky. I'm not sure Loyola of Chicago is not the best basketball team in that region. Watching them play, their coach is a Rich Majerus disciple. They're not the most talented team in that region, but I really like the way they play. Like, they haven't, and I think in some ways they really haven't reached their max, but you can kind of tell that they know what they're doing. They get good shots. They play tough defense. It's unlikely they come out of there, but I wouldn't be shocked.
So who's your Final Four?
I'll take Kentucky.
All right. So you got Kentucky. Who else did you have?
Gonzaga and Villanova. Villanova and Duke, I still feel like, is the national championship game on the semifinal.
Gotcha. Craig Ross?
I'm going to take Duke and Purdue. I think Carson Edwards is one of the hardest players in the country to check, and I think he's going to get hot.
Well, he's got to play better than he did.
Well, I know, but I still think he will. And I like Vince Edwards there a lot, and
Vince Edwards, man.
I like Duke and Purdue. On the other side, I guess I like Florida State and Florida State to make it through. And who's the other? Who do I have?
The South. The decimated region.
Yeah, who's left over there?
Kentucky and everybody else?
Kentucky, Loyola. Kansas State, Loyola, Chicago.
I like Loyola.
It's going to be a Kentucky home crowd for 2 days there.
Kentucky is coached in an Izzo-esque fashion, and so I'll take Loyola.
So, you know, if were it not for the UMBC victory, would Tom Izzo, Michigan State, be the biggest epic, colossal failure of the tournament this year?
Yes.
I mean, I think a little bit not so much just because Syracuse is a
not so
fast,
much.
Well, Syracuse is terrible.
I don't disagree with you, but
they're the last team in the tournament against Michigan State, at the most talented team,
and
Tom Izzo's
everyone picks
at home.
At home.
Come on, man. Come on, Ed.
And he's got a Big Ten ref in the first game, too. He's got Carstensen, too, in the game. You know, they had every advantage, and they still came out and play like that.
He choked. It was a horrendous coaching job, and he caused the seat. And, you know, more power to you if you're a lottery pick and you want to go to Michigan State. I have no idea why you would do that. It just you don't get better.
Yeah, I can't believe Jaren Jackson like even put up the fiction that he was thinking about coming back. Like, I played 15 minutes in a tournament game.
I'll bet it comes back
behind a guy who averaged.
I'm
two
serious. I bet
think
it comes
about
back.
If you're Jaren Jackson's family, mm-hmm. and you're talking about your development over the course of the year. Just look at the last game. Your coach told you what he thought of your development. Mm. He played you 15 minutes. In a game for the money, and he played that guy who played 2 minutes a game all season, he played that guy more than you. What does that say about what he thinks about your development?
That's a pretty reasonable point.
I'm just saying.
But it's a lot of smoke and mirrors in East Lansing.
I agree.
There's no bag big enough to keep Jaren Jackson in East Lansing.